Probably more than at any time since the Cuban Missile Crisis, Americans are beginning to think a little bit about surviving and how to avoid nuclear war death. That's something certainly that should be on the table in most homes now. It's a real possibility. Probability? I don't know. Possibility? You bet. It's there. Mitchell Henderson is back tonight. We're going to talk about what you can do and what things you ought to be thinking about in terms of surviving. This is a very difficult time, and if not from a thermonuclear war, look at the government, the alleged government of Washington, D.C., and what do you think your chances are of surviving that mess? And I mean that. It's that bad. Hello, Mitchell. Welcome back. How goes it?
Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah. Nice to hear your voice. What's new? Anything? You having fun on your vacation?
I'm eating well.
Good.
There's lots of places to eat up there.
Right.
So,
yeah, very good.
So anyways, what I'm going to talk about tonight is I'm talking about preparing. So this is things for your personal go bag and for your vehicle go bag, okay? So tonight we're going to talk about shelter. So shelter is actually an aspect of water, okay, because you must keep your body temperature within a small range so chemical reactions can take place in your body. If the water in your body evaporates, you are dead. If the water in your body freezes, you are dead. If you are too cold, the chemical reactions slow down. If you are too hot, they speed up. If your body temperature is not in normal range, not all the chemical reactions necessary to sustain life can occur. If they can occur, it drags you down. It weakens you, and it makes you more susceptible to infection. So your first shelter is the clothes that you wear. When it is hot, you need to have light, breathable clothing that does not warm you up. Some like to wear short pants, but I would advise against that. You are not out for a hike. You are trying to survive. Long pants give you some protection from scratches, abrasions, insect stings, thorns, and even snake bites.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a snake strike at my legs and release all the venom when his fangs penetrated the cloth but did not make contact with my skin. Loose long pants are better for this. Wear long sleeve shirts if going through bush to cut down on ticks and scratches. This will also protect you from sunburn. Like I said, this is not a vacation, so you need to protect yourself from the little things so that you can stay strong. Survival is not about throwing caution to the wind. It is about being more cautious and more careful. When it is cold, you need to layer your clothing according to just how cold it is. Layering consists of a base layer, a mid layer, and an outer layer of clothing. The base layer should be a fabric that wicks sweat away from your skin. The importance of this was driven home to me during my Army Basic Combat Training course in the winter of 1971 at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. We would run out to the rifle range on a cold day with our field jackets on and be sweating profusely by the time we arrived at the range. Then we had to stand in formation for an hour while they got the range set up. The sweat would freeze and chill us to the bone. Everyone had a cold or a flu all the time, it seemed. And this might toughen up young soldiers, but it is detrimental to survival. Merino wool, polyester, or nylon is good for this. Do your research and get the best stuff that you can afford. This can make survival a bit more comfortable. You will have an edge over people who do not have this.
Oh yeah.
The middle layer is for insulation, to retain heat and keep your body's core temperature warm. You can have more than one middle layer. Polyester, fleece shirts, and jackets are good for this. On warmer days, this may be your outer layer, so keep camouflage in mind. Jackets with down insulation are great because down can keep you warm even when it is wet. The outer layer is to keep you warm, dry, and the wind off you. This will be your big coat. It is good if it extends down over your butt to your legs. Look at the armies fighting in the winter wars, and they all have long coats on. It should fit your environment and be camouflage. It needs to have an outer fabric that keeps the wind from penetrating and a fabric that keeps you dry. Getting wet in the cold is a death sentence. It defeats all the insulation and wicks your body heat out to warm the water. I learned these lessons in Korea. If you look at a map of where Korea is, it is attached to this place called Siberia. Siberia is cold. When I was in the field in the winter, Korea is a miserable place. The wind did penetrate the field jackets, even with a field jacket liner in it. Freezing your ass off kills morale and dampens the fighting spirit. Finally, you need something to keep you dry even when it is hot. Many people are unaware of this, but the number one killer diseases in the tropics is pneumonia and influenza. If you get wet and stay wet, you can get very chilled and set yourself up for pneumonia. I have only gotten pneumonia in the tropics. I have never gotten it in a cold climate.
You know that, let me, Mitch, if I might.
Yes, go ahead.
The idea of, oh, if I get chilled or if it's cold out tonight, I'm going to get sick. I might catch a cold. I might get the flu. Right. It has nothing to do with the temperature you're in. Colds do not come about spontaneously because the thermometer drops down to 39 degrees. Doesn't happen.
Right.
Go ahead. Right. Please.
Yes, yes. Because when I get chilled in the tropics, the temperature may be 80 out, and I'll still get pneumonia. Okay. I've had far more influenza in the tropics also. I would suggest carrying at least a small plastic poncho in your pocket. They also make small pocket blankets that can retain heat. Carry them in your pocket in case you get separated from the rest of your gear. They also make inexpensive pocket ponchos that are designed to retain body heat. Once I was caught in Guangxi Province in South China with just a plastic poncho. It kept me dry, but I got too cold anyway because of the humidity and got pneumonia anyway. Since you will be carrying a go bag, a full-size regular poncho is necessary to keep your equipment dry. Make sure it is camouflaged so you are not as visible. I was hitchhiking down the Alcan Highway from Alaska and did not have a poncho. The rain soaked the food in my backpack and made it very unappetizing, to say the least. In Alaska, I was hunting, fishing, and gathering all my food, so it did not come to my attention there. In Canada, I could not hunt or fish, so my food supply was very different, and I had not prepared for that. These ponchos can also be used to make a lean-to or a small tent. As I mentioned before, the large plastic bags that you should have with you can also be a sleeping bag or a raincoat in an emergency. Staying warm is a priority. After civilization crashes, there won't be fuel for very long. Your main mode of transportation will be what the Army called LPCs, or leather personnel carriers, your boots. To make it very clear, your feet will be the most important part of your body because you will not survive unless you keep them in good shape. You need to have decent wool socks and as many spares as you can carry. You cannot afford blisters or foot infections. Foot care is critical. Baby your feet. This means that you must have some good boots and make sure they are broken in. Your boots need to keep your feet warm and dry. Cold weather and wet feet cause trench foot, which can be fatal if not treated. Freezing weather can cause frostbite, which can also be fatal if not treated. Good warm boots that insulate your feet are essential to your survival. Good socks that wick the moisture away from your feet are essential. Whatever you must spend to get the best socks and boots is worth it, because it will likely be your only means of transportation at some point. Carry extra socks, and at the end of the day, when you are resting, put clean, dry socks on to give your feet a rest. Some sports stores have experienced hikers that can give you good advice. Search YouTube videos on the subject before you buy. Compare products. This is one area not to skimp on. You will want to stay dry and warm while you are sleeping. What I have done is purchased a small two-man tent, rolled it up in an army wool blanket, put that inside of a large green trash bag to keep it dry, and put some carrying straps on it so I can carry it separate than my go bag. These small zip-up tents have several advantages. It will keep you dry and out of the weather, but it will also keep snakes and insects off you while you're sleeping. Insects bring you disease. After the fall of civilization, it will be diseases that will be the leading cause of death. You need every edge that you can get. In the late 1800s, the French were more successful in exploring North Africa because they used mosquito nets. The British did not and had greater casualties from yellow fever, malaria, and other diseases carried by insects. The French had reduced the risk substantially with something as simple as a mosquito net. These small two-man tents will give you that advantage. I suggest a two-man tent because when I use mosquito nets and one-man tents in the tropics, I would inevitably roll against the side and mosquitoes would bite through the fabric. I got malaria and dengue fever anyways as a result. Make sure that the two-man tent is the appropriate color for camouflage in your area. If you can't find one, take a small plastic tarp that is the right color with you. When you can't, be sure to use vegetation to further camouflage your tent and break up its outline. The Army wool blanket keeps you warm. I saw a video of a guy in Alberta, Canada, camping out in the woods. He built a small lean-to with pine branches, used pine needles to pad the ground, and built a fire near his lean-to with stacked logs on the other side of the fire as a reflector. He had two thermometers. One outside was measuring the temperature at 27 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, and the one in his lean-to measured the temperature of 60 degrees Fahrenheit. He slept comfortably with just the wool blanket. In colder areas, you might want to carry a sleeping bag that is rated for more than the coldest temperatures common in your area. You will not need a fire to sleep if you have a sleeping bag. It will be more bulk, but you will get more rest.
Right.
And a good warm sleep is not a luxury, it is a necessity. You are trying to survive the collapse of civilization, not going
True.
On a military operation for a few months. At the same time, you are not going on a military operation. So speed and long-distance travel once you arrive at your rural readout will not be a factor, and you can carry more. You will not have to be in a hurry unless someone is after you. You are not fighting a war. You are surviving. Do not give up comfort unless you must. But don't let comfort make you complacent either. If you can have a fire, you can let it burn most of the day, then move that at night and sleep over it. To sleep over the warm dirt that you created with the day fire. I have even dug a trench to build a fire so that both the ground and the walls of the trench are warm. To retain heat, I put a tarp over the trench to use as a tent. Just be sure that you clear all embers away so you don't catch your bedding on fire. Of course, it's a good if you can build small shelters and improve them or make them in conjunction with natural shelters. If you are staying a while, improve these shelters, but don't make them obvious for others to notice. Camouflage well. Depending on your specific situation, you may be able to make yourself a comfortable home. Just don't make it where people can see it. In my travels, I've seen people make shelters out of all kinds of things. Don't be afraid to use your imagination. Aside from camouflage, you should set up security measures. If you are by yourself, tie strings low to the ground near your camp with rocks and cans or other noisemakers. Put them close enough that you can hear them, but far enough away to give you reaction time to get away.
Uh-huh.
Also,
you know,
have
Mitch,
escape routes.
One,
yes,
Mitchell, one other thing.
Yes.
They have, and you can find them on Amazon, they have their little trip wires. You can put them across rabbit paths, deer paths, human paths. And there's a 12-gauge shotgun shell attached to the tripwire. And if somebody kicks the wire at night, the shell goes off straight up. It doesn't hurt anybody. It's just basically a noise. There's no, I don't think there are any pellets in it even. Anyhow, it goes bang, and right away, everyone's alert that there's someone nearing or some animal nearing. Now, that can be a little tricky if you've got a heavy deer population, but that's another way to make, make noise. These are $30 or something like that. Anyway, go ahead. Just another tool.
No, that's actually the anything that you can find like that. I mean, just search, and if you think it'll work for you, definitely get
yeah.
it. Okay, so also have escape routes already selected before you rest. Escape routes should have cover and concealment so that you can safely slip away. Escape routes should go into thick bushes or arroyos so that they will lose track of you right away. If you find yourself in a place where you can stay for a while, take your time to build yourself a good and functional camp or home. Okay, so let's go to fire, because fire is a part of, it's the same part of shelter. See, like shelter is a function of water, fire is a function of shelter. Okay, fire is also a function of water because you may have to heat yourself off, dry your clothes up, boil water, or heat your food up. First, you will need the tools to start fires. Weatherproof matches are good to have, plus regular matches and cigarette lighters. Fire is so important to life that it is good to have redundancy. Also have a magnifying glass so you can use the sun to start a fire if your gear gets soaked. You should also carry some hexamine fire starting cubes so you can get a fire going. You can also use these cubes as a standalone fire to heat food if you need to cut down on how much fire is showing if you're trying to avoid detection. Do not forget about gunpowder and ammunition. You can pry the bullet out of the shell and light a match to the powder and get a fire going. Most military and commercial explosives will just burn in the air if not contained. This includes the cheese propellant explosive used to launch mortars. When I was the weapons platoon leader, we had lots of excess cheese for the mortars, and we used it to cook food and heat coffee. Just light a match to it. You need a good sheath knife so that you can shave a dry stick for kindling to get a fire going. You will need to carry a good hatchet in your personal go bag so you can cut wood to build a fire. I have a little folding handsaw in my personal go bag also.
Oh, yeah,
in your vehicle,
good idea.
You can carry a go bag, carry an axe and a bow saw to save mm-hmm. yourself labor when cutting wood.
Right. What about Swiss Army knives? Do we like those, Mitch?
Yes, yes, yes. Listen, I have all kinds of little knives that I just put everywhere,
yeah.
You know. And a knife is always handy. Okay, so what I'm talking about when you're making kindling, you know, one is to break up a lot of little sticks, but you could just take a stick and then just like cut it back, and you know, the wood curls up and stuff, and that burns real easy and starts a fire really. So it's a good way to make kindling. Okay, so once nuclear war starts, approximately 10% of the population will die in the attacks. Over the following year, about 30% of the survivors will kill each other off in the anarchy that ensues after the dust settles. The fighting between people will pick up as resources dwindle. People will hunt you down and kill you to take what you have. Gangs will organize and decide who lives and who dies. The worst gang of all, the U.S. government, will do the same with a lot less mercy. During this time, about 30% of the remaining people will die from starvation. There are 8 billion people on Earth without fuel, transportation, electricity, and communication. There is no way to distribute goods to them. I talked to a Walmart and grocery store managers, and they said that under normal conditions, all the goods in their stores are gone within 48 hours. After a nuclear war, there will be nobody to restock those stores. There are just too many people and too few supplies. Within a month, the weakest among us will be dead from starvation and disease. Within 3 months, the famine will be burning through the population like wildfire. And within a year, most will be dead. Another 30% will perish.
One other thing, Mitch. I would suggest factoring in the reality that 81%, 84%, some say, of Americans have taken the bioweapon injection. They're dying.
Yes.
Many of them are dying.
Right.
And their immune systems are down. They're in bad shape on many different front lines in their body. They're dying. It's not a joke. I don't like saying it. It makes me sick. But they took the shots, and they're paying for it now. So those people are going to make what you're describing, they're going to compound it by several factors because they do not have the immune system.
Is.
They are not healthy. They have sludge blood. Their hearts are being overworked. They can't make it. So go ahead. I just wanted to put that out there.
But another will perish from the pestilence that accompanies famine. So these people, even the people with the shot, they're not going to have food. So they're already weakened, and not having food is going to weaken the immune system so that diseases will spread among the survivors rapidly, especially the starving. About half of them will die from intestinal diseases because the food will be spoiled or contaminated. Cooking food and boiling water will be necessary to avoid intestinal infections. The problem with fire during this time is that it will attract attention. People will be able to find you to kill you and take your supplies. The higher the density of people in an area means the higher intensity of these problems. My advice to you is get away from people as far as you can, especially if you are on your own. The denser the population that you are in, the larger group of friends and allies you should have. Evil people will organize. If possible, you should organize. As famine, pestilence, and anarchy burn through the population, the less competition you will have to struggle against. On a flat surface, you can see a campfire smoke 50 miles away. You can smell it good enough to locate it miles away. At night, you can see a candle 1.5 miles away and see a campfire up to 3 to 5 miles away. Wow. If you are in flat forest, it will be harder to see. On an open prairie or plain, easier to see. If you are in mountainous terrain, you can spot smoke and fires 100 miles away, depending on the elevation of the observer. A fire will most certainly attract attention. You can reduce this by building a fire in a pit to reduce light and using small dry wood to reduce smoke production.
Good thinking.
If you are on your own, a fire is a bad idea. If you have enough people to put out guards to let you know someone is coming and defend yourself from another group, you may be able to risk it.
Got it.
At first, it may be too bad of a risk. In my go bag, I have some Sterno cans to cook food with. Still, put these in a pit to cook. A candle flame can be seen from 1.5 miles away. These are your safest bets. Mm-hmm. As time goes by, the population thins out and the calculus may change. Your goal is to survive any contact with others. Your goal is to survive, and any contact with others may reduce your chances of survival. As famine burns through the population, there will be plenty of human cannibalism. They may not just be interested in taking your stuff. You may be on the menu.
That's true. Mitch, let's hold that thought. Hold that thought. I got to take a break here. We'll come back and pick it up with cannibalism, a popular topic all the time. Next. Okay, and we're continuing along learning more about how to survive, or at least give us all the best chance of surviving if the fertilizer hits the circulating blade. All right, Mitchell, go right ahead.
So I was talking about how my father was in Shanghai, China at the end of World War II. This was after the fighting stopped. He was there to accept the surrender of Japanese troops. China had too many people packed into a small area and no supply trains to bring food in yet. He told me that there were lots of dead bodies floating in the river and people were hunting little children to kill and eat. After eating all the cats and dogs, they moved on to children. He said some parents were so desperate that they butchered and ate their own children before somebody else did. If you are on your own, you may have to get by without fire or heat for at least a year. If you are with a large enough group, you can set out observation posts to give you early warning that someone is coming so you can defend yourself or run away, whichever is appropriate. Right. During the first year, you will want to avoid where fires are. There will be people attacking, but that is a bad strategy. The risk of getting killed or wounded in an attack on someone else reduces your chance of survival. Also, many fires will be set as traps to lure people in to kill them. To reduce enemies in your area, you may want to do this. Set up a camp, make a campfire, then set up a sniper position as far away as possible. You need a head start if you need to run. Don't bite off more than you can chew. If you are outnumbered, retreat. If they are less than you, an ambush might be a good idea to avoid them finding you later and surprising you in an ambush. Fire can also be used in defense. If you are being pursued by people and they are downwind, starting a fire that will blow onto them may be an option. You are trying to survive. There are zero rules in a fight for survival. So let me move on to food. Initially, to escape the city, have food in your personal go bag. Have lots of protein bars and a bag of small baby root candy bars. The candy bars are for quicker energy and to avoid having to start a fire to cook and giving your position away. Mm-hmm. I was working in South America during the cholera epidemic of 1992. I carried a bag of baby root candy bars with me in case I could not get hot cooked food in the high altiplano and on the remote frontier where Bolivia, Chile, and Argentina come together. Cholera can kill you within hours. An ounce of prevention was necessary because there simply was not a cure available to me. This is how it will be after civilization collapses. There will be no help. The candy bars were my default option. I have a separate tote bag that you can carry like a backpack. I have more protein bars in there along with bags of nuts and beef jerky. I have a few backpackers freeze-dried meals in there also. Then I have another bag full of freeze-dried meals in another bag. This is to go with my vehicle go bag. Before you go, it would not do any harm to throw other food from your pantry into your vehicle. In my personal go bag, I have some Sterno cans to boil water to use with my freeze-dried meals. I have a tin cup to use to heat water for you and to use in the solar still. Learn what plants and animals you can eat in your area. Buy edible plant books and take the time now to familiarize yourself with them. If you have trees where you are, you have food. This is probably the most important food information you can have. It will keep you alive and help you survive. Trees have several layers. On the outside is the bark. The bark is like the skin that protects the tree and keeps the moisture in and the insects out. The layer below the bark is called the inner bark or phloem. The phloem is the pipeline through which food is passed to the rest of the tree. The next layer
is the cambium.
Yeah. Yes. The next layer is the cambium, which is the growing part of the tree. The next layer is the sapwood, and it carries water up the tree also. Then at the center of the tree is the heartwood, which holds the tree up. The cambium layer is edible on most trees. Cambium has carbohydrates, vitamins, minerals, and, of course, fibers. Introduce yourself to it slowly so you can acclimate to the fiber. You don't want to lose water due to the pounders. It is nutritious. It is edible on most pine trees except for yew, cypress, and cedars because they produce chemicals to poison insects. The yew tree is the source of Taxol, a chemotherapy drug. Learn what a yew tree looks like. They are distinct from other pines. Also, avoid lodgepole pine, ponderosa pine, and Norfolk Island pine. They are somewhat toxic and should be avoided. If it tastes awful, don't eat it. Many other trees, cambium is edible, like birch, linden, elm, willow, oak, poplar, maple. To harvest, just peel off the bark, then scrape off the cambium with a knife. It can be eaten raw, boiled, or fried. Some saps are sweet and tasty, like maple trees, but not all saps are edible. Up in Oregon, there's a lot of yew trees in the Northwest, so up there you need to avoid those. So poisonous plants exist because the plant creates toxins as a self-defense against being eaten. It is very important to learn what plants are toxic. There are many common weeds that are edible. Learn about them in your area. Dandelions are widespread and they're edible. If you do not know about mushrooms already, leave them alone. They are deadly. In 1981, I had to go to the hospital in Tampa to take a report from a guy who drank some psilocybin tea. He did not get off. He got sick. His friends collected some mushrooms that they thought were psilocybin mushrooms and gave him the tea to drink first. The toxic symptoms are not necessarily immediate, but the hallucinations come on fast. When he did not start tripping, no one else drank the tea. He died a horrible, painful death within a couple of days. Yeah. He was a good friend because he did not pimp his friends out. Nobody was charged with his murder. The moral to this story is not to trust someone else's mushroom choices. If they eat them and they survive the week, maybe they do know what they're doing. Sometimes the symptoms of poisoning do not show up for several days. You will not survive mushroom poisoning. Let me just say that again. You will not survive mushroom poisoning. The shame of this was that the psilocybin mushroom is, in fact, a very easy mushroom to identify. This guy's friends were just assholes. So in the Western Hemisphere, most birds and animals are edible. In Asia, they have birds whose flesh is toxic, but I can think of none in this hemisphere. Avoid eating armadillos because they carry leprosy. Learn to make traps and purchase some ready-made traps, put in your vehicle go bag. Get a book that tells you how to make traps and put it in your vehicle go bag also. Traps have the advantage that they do not make noise that attracts attention. They have the disadvantage that if a stranger happens upon them, he will know that someone else is in the area. You can use other weapons that are silent to kill game for food, such as slingshots, a bow, an arrow, a crossbow, or even a pellet gun. These require practice to get good at, so practice before the dreaded day arrives. You can use a .22 long rifle caliber rifle, which is great for small game. It is loud, but not as loud as a big game round. For birds, you can trap them or use birdshot and shotgun that will make lots of noise. I would suggest a 12-gauge shotgun for your vehicle go bag with a variety of different shot to include rifle slugs for deer and double-up buck shot for human. You can get all kinds of shells.
Some people, yes. Mitchell, some people
yes.
opt for a 20-gauge. About the same performance as a 12, believe it or not, as you know, but it's much easier on the ladies, so to speak. Doesn't kick them.
As a matter of fact, I always recommend a 20 gauge for the women. They do handle them much better. So, as a matter of fact, I was going to get to that. So you can get all kinds of shells for a shotgun, including tear gas, smoke grenades, and incendiary. They are versatile weapons. In my experience, women handle a 20 gauge shotgun just fine, and there is plenty of ammunition available. Your main self-defense rifles will be fine for bigger game. If you can learn to hunt, it would be helpful. If not, at least get a how to hunt book and animal tracking book and put it into your vehicle go bag. Pick up some animal calls to help you out. You can eat reptiles also, but many of these are poisonous. There is also seafood to eat, either freshwater or saltwater. You will need a line and some hooks just in case. There are lots of streams and lakes where you are, if there are a lot, develop fishing tackle kit appropriate to your area. If you don't know how to do it, buy a book about fishing and use that book to decide what equipment you are going to need and put it into your vehicle go bag. Right. Put some lines and hooks in your personal go bag also. For saltwater fishing, it would be useful to have a guide to what kind of fish are edible to put in your vehicle go bag. If you can, go out hunting and fishing in your area now before war comes. Any experience hunting and fishing is better than none. In an emergency, it is not the best time to learn. If you have friends or family that hunt or fish, go with them so they can show you the ropes. After the Vietnam War was over, researchers asked the People's Army of Vietnam soldiers what they thought of American troops in battle. They said that the area that they found the American soldiers lacking was in field craft. In World War I and World War II, soldiers came mostly from rural areas. There were plenty of soldiers with good field craft. By Vietnam, most soldiers were from an urban environment and did not acquire those skills growing up. It is far worse nowadays. The best pool of soldiers that we have is from the rural South. The U.S. Army does not want Southern white boys, rednecks, or hillbillies. I am a Southern redneck and a hillbilly, so I do not mean this as a put-down. That is the U.S. Army's loss and a gain for the rest of us when we don't have the best hunting us down. Anybody that was raised rurally and has hunting and fishing experience has an advantage. So this includes rural black people in the South, Native Americans in the West, and, of course, Western farmers and ranchers. Cowboys have skills. Basically, try to have as many tools for hunting and fishing as feasible. put some smaller stuff in your personal go bag and put the rest in your vehicle go bag. You may run across canned foods. These will usually be just fine to eat. If the can is compromised or bloated, it may not be safe to eat. Otherwise, it should be safe. Me and a buddy ate a can of chicken noodle soup that was canned in 1941 in an abandoned cabin in Alaska. We opened it in 1971, 30 years later, and it tasted like it was just off the grocery store shelf. It was good. When I was a kid, I saw a movie about nuclear war made in the 1950s. The people ate canned food that fallout had fallen into. The people got sick and died. This was a lie. If radioactive dust is on the can, just wash it off. What is inside the can is perfectly safe to eat.
Sure.
You wash it off so that the can opener does not drive the radioactive dust into the food. If you eat radioactive stuff, it makes you sick and it will kill you. There will be cannibalism starting within the first few months of civilization falling apart, and definitely in the city. Cannibalism is an ill-advised strategy for survival. Mad cow disease started in the United Kingdom because British farmers fed their cows other cows. The parts of cattle not sold were ground up and made into feed to feed to other cattle. If you eat your own species, it introduces prions into your system. These prions are brain proteins that are twisted differently so they will not function. Once one is introduced into your brain, it will make all the other brain protein twist into the non-functioning form that it is. In humans, we noticed that cannibalistic Highland tribes in New Guinea had prion disease that they called Kuru, or the Laughing Death. They noticed that in the funeral rites, the women and children would eat the brains of the deceased, and they developed prion disease the most. If you must eat someone, do not eat the brain, the eyes, or any parts that have lots of nerves in them, like spine, neck, and backbone, and ribs.
Well, let me tell you something add to that,
yes.
Mitch. You can't eat any part of any mammal that is infested with prion disease. It's everywhere. It doesn't stay in one location. If it's in the bloodstream, it's everywhere. So just keep that in mind.
Right. That's what I was saying. This will not prevent prion disease, but will reduce your chances a little bit to avoid the brain tissue and so forth. Okay. So let me stop there, and we'll pick up next time, because it'll take me too long to go over the next part of this be on how to escape innovation. So.
Okay. This issue of cannibalism is very important. It's not something that we're going to dodge. It's going to happen. If the the economy comes down, the societal regulations come down, the police fail, everything fails, you're going to see the lower IQ element of this culture begin to eat other humans. They will be first. They're doing it right now in Africa. It's common. South Africa, especially, it's common there. It'll be common here, too. It's no joke.
Well, if you look around America, what is the most prevalent animal species walking around? It is human beings. And when everybody's starving to death after the first 30 to 60 days, and all the food from the grocery stores and everything is gone, those people who have not prepared, they're going to have to start eating other people.
Well, the literature makes it very clear. Human flesh tastes virtually identical to pork, so it's not something repulsive to people.
So here's the thing: absolutely do not plan on doing that because the prion disease thing is all you're doing is buying yourself a little bit of time. You will get a prion disease. You will suffer miserably from that prion disease. So
it's commonly CJD now. We've covered
that very
carefully.
Yes. They found that out from people doing eye transplants, retina transplants. That caused people to get prion disease. Just transplants.
Creutzfeldt-Jakob, and it's true.
Yeah.
Medical procedure can potentially transmit prions, to the next patient, because autoclave sterilization of medical instruments is not enough.
Does nothing.
That's up to 400 degrees.
You can't cook humans either. Cooking human is not going to prevent prion disease. It won't.
No, the prions survive up to...
We're not even talking about eating them raw. If you cook them, you still get prion disease.
It doesn't matter. And the reason you cook people at about 400 degrees, 500, prions can survive 1,200 degrees. That's why the medical instruments are never fully sterilized. Can't happen.
Right.
Because the autoclaves go up to about 375 degrees. Look it up. So that's a problem. When the last time I went to the dentist, I made sure the dentist used only new implements. I paid for them. I said, I only want brand new, out of the package, scrapers, probes, whatever the hell they are. And I paid. And then I said, keep them here so the next time I come, and this is 10, 15 years ago, so when I come back, they'll be mine, and they'll be in a little, and the dentist was nice enough to keep them in a little closet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there are any others, but that's a very smart thing to do if you have to go to the dentist often. Get your own implements. Have them buy them. You pay and have them keep them. They'll put them in a little bag or whatever. There's another one. There's so many things to really concern yourself about, but common sense is critical, and that's something we are in very short supply. All of the people now who live in that screen, in that reality, that digital reality that they stare at, that's not life, that's not real. They're not going to be able to survive, Mitch, as you know, for very long at all. They just won't.
No. And you know, if you plant, there's many ways to plan for food. Even if you don't have a place in the countryside, you can go out and preposition food, dig cache it and preposition it for years later. You know, figure out a way to market so that you can find it. What I always do is I remember a number, a favorite number. Okay, and then the first number is south, the second number is west, and that's where I bury the thing, that many feet from the marker. So somebody looks around the marker, they don't find anything, but you know your number, and you go that many feet south and west or north and east or whatever, and that's where your cache is at, okay? So, you know, just be creative and stuff. If you prepare a little bit, you don't have to resort to cannibalism, okay? You don't want to anyway. I mean, all you're doing
COVID?
Gonna suffer later.
No, you can't eat someone who's been vaxxed. For goodness sakes,
you're
going to die. And all of the major organ transplants now, not good.
If you eat somebody that's had a COVID shot, that is a GMO diet you're eating there.
Correct.
Eating GMOs, you know.
There's a lot going on.
So that's an additional problem that we, you know, nobody's eaten COVID people before, so we don't know what terrors and horrors that has in store for you.
No. They're going to find out. Look, it's really a question of, Mitch, when is your book due out?
Well, actually, I just have to get home and edit it a little bit, and it'll be good to go. I'll be off to market. So in a few weeks, I should have it off to the publisher.
Very good. Okay. Well, this is a must-have book for all of you out there. He's got it all. Practical, life-saving advice and how to survive. People, Americans are so unprepared. Now, some of you listening are very prepared, but most people out there are not. They're dependent
on
just-in-time shopping.
They don't believe that it can happen
here. That's right. It never has, so how can it?
Right? But listen, I there's people I talked to 4 years ago who said that there's no way that we're in the end times. Now I find very few people who would say that we're not in the end times. It's so apparent that we're in the end times, it's not funny. I mean, even if you're not a religious person, I mean, for crying out loud, look at Ukraine, look at Iran and Israel. We're headed for nuclear war. We have idiots running this country that are going to get us all killed. okay? And we insist right. we insist on putting the most stupid, shallow people possible as our leaders. You know, nobody with any look. There's nobody with any gravitas that is running for president of the United States. They have no gravitas. They're not serious. They're not profound thinkers. They're not. They don't have vision. They don't have foresight. They're going to get us all killed. And I would say we're voting on it, but actually we have no control over who gets elected. But it doesn't matter who gets elected because they're all shallow people, you know.
Right. All terribly much so. I couldn't agree more. Okay, next week's topic will be, again, how to escape, basically.
Yes, it's just going to be a little bit on how to avoid violence, which is escape and invasion.
Well, yeah, if you have a choice, you don't want to encounter violence at all. No.
No, because it's
Thank
about
you, Mitch.
Survival.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right,
okay,
excellent. Okay, take good care. Say hi to everybody. All right.
Okay.
There he goes, Mitchell Henderson. And words to the wise, for sure. Be right back in a couple.